welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning to you.
There is so much show to bring you today. 3 hours just might not be enough. Unfortunately, that's what we have. So we're going to give it to you in 3 hours.
You can stay for some extra credit, Jenna.
I mean, 5 hours is what I'm going to need to bring you everything we have today. Can LeBron James win his fifth career MVP in his first year as a Laker? Have the Cowboys found their answer at wide receiver? And boy, do we have some information on Kawhi you are going to want to hear. So why don't we start right there? That is the big news. The Kawhi drama, pin the tail on where he will end up. Less popular children's game. The Toronto Raptors are now even money betting favorites to land the superstar, and the Raptors add them to the short list of destinations we've been hearing about. The Lakers, the Clippers, maybe the Sixers. CC, you've been on this from the beginning. You spoke to Kawhi's people just last night. Is Kawhi Leonard going to Toronto?
Well, I think sports fans, a lot of times we hear a lot of reports on a daily basis. It's important that we're on top of those things. The reason why yesterday's news as far as Kawhi, was he going to end up in Toronto? Because some betting website, right?
Bet Online is what got it going. They installed him as very high favorites out of nowhere, it seemed.
Yeah, but the public should know this is a website that typically they do some shocking, typically odds, but on the backside is that they're only letting you wager a small
amount
of money.
So this is, you give the Kawhi info, I can kind of give the gambling side of it. Sometimes Vegas odds tell you a lot. Particularly, those are Vegas odds that a big casino in Vegas would let you come in and set down $10,000 on something, right? Sometimes online sports books, in an attempt to get on shows such as this one, I already mentioned their name once today, so it was successful for them, they will put in odds that are, we saw one of these, I think it was the same website, last week, briefly installed the Lakers as the favorites to win the title. And everyone is like, wow, the Lakers, they were never the favorites. But they do that and they can protect themselves because they'll only let you bet a few $100s as opposed to thousands of dollars like you could if you go to the Bellagio in Vegas. And so that's what really got this going. And then once one online sportsbook does it, many follow suit. And all of a sudden, you can credibly say the Raptors are the favorites to land Kawhi Leonard. So that's how this becomes a discussion, but you have actual information about the non-gambling side of it. So go ahead.
Right. I don't think anything's changed. Now, is it still a possibility? You know, Kawhi can be traded anywhere. Like any team, yeah. So is it a possibility? But nothing's changed from Kawhi's side as far as from these standpoints. He still wants to go to Los Angeles, and he's still not interested in being rented out for one season. So that being Philadelphia, Boston, Toronto, or any other team. The thing that we should know is San Antonio has been in contact with Kawhi and his people, and they've told them that if something was to get real, real close, we'll reach out to you. Well, it's in their best interest and smart for them to reach out to him. And typically the other team that's involved in the trade will be granted permission to reach out to the star player or the player that's being traded. None of those things happened yesterday. Actually, Kawhi and them were thinking about, you know, maybe potentially having a press release and everything because everyone was running with this story. Kawhi had, he was in Las Vegas for one night with some friends, mm-hmm. and he's not in Vegas anymore, but people were running rampant with the story. So they realized that, no, nothing's changed with San Antonio. Nothing's changed as far as Kawhi and their camp and their demands. Their demands are still exactly the same as I reported last week.
Go ahead, Jenna.
So
people might wonder, so then why did the Raptors all of a sudden go to the top of the list? Why would the sportsbook put them there? I think I know. A guy I talk about a lot and a guy who has incredible sources and also incredible information, Zach Lowe. He not only wrote a very plausible trade that seemingly would be fair for both sides involving the Raptors in his most recent column. He then talked about it on a podcast, and you looked at it, you're like, oh, DeMar DeRozan plus OG Anunoby and a first-round pick. You understand why the Spurs might say, okay, so we're getting an all-star.
Yes.
We're getting a young draft pick who profiles out as a good defender, not a Kawhi-level defender.
But in the mode of a San Antonio-type player, would do all things.
100%.
Defenses first, has really improved his shooting.
So Zach lays out this trade. Also, we know that the Raptors might be trying to pivot away from the Lowry-DeRozan combo. DeRozan's the more attractive tradable piece. And then you also know, okay, so wait. The Lakers seem to be at a stalemate with the Spurs. The Clippers don't have the assets. At last report, the Sixers won't include Fultz, and we don't know if the Spurs want him. The Celtics won't even include Jaylen Brown. And now you can squint and say, oh, would the Raptors do that move? If they thought, what percent chance would the Raptors need to believe they could keep Kawhi Leonard in order to do that move? And you could even argue, would the Raptors do that move even if they knew they couldn't keep Kawhi? Because privately, maybe they would like the idea of getting off DeRozan's money, of being able to start anew, of being able to start fresh. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of reasons why you could say this might actually make sense. It would give the Spurs a chance to stay competitive during Pop's final couple years. So from all the perspectives other than whether or not Kawhi Leonard has any interest in, much less not going to L.A., right, but going all the way to Canada, you can see why you would say, oh, that's an interesting move that could be made.
Also, the first year that the Toronto Raptors would not have to go through LeBron James and the Cavaliers, maybe they're going to put all the eggs in the basket this year and say, okay, we've not been able to do it because of LeBron James. He's now gone. But if we're hearing this rumor, obviously the Lakers are hearing this rumor as well. Would the Lakers be making a mistake sort of letting Kawhi slip through the cracks this year?
The Lakers would be making a tremendous mistake. And it really, you wouldn't be able to finish the LeBron equation. Because Nick and I had talked about, when you talk about Kawhi and what San Antonio might want before free agency opened, it was really based on, if you can land Kawhi, you're getting both players. Well, right, LeBron's already there. So for me, I don't believe that the Lakers can give up too much in trying to get him. To be careful, though, in the same building, there's a man, Jerry West. And if you would look for a place potentially to build steal Kawhi away, watch to see if the Clippers can get a third team involved. All right? That is far more reasonable, far more likely to happen than the Toronto trade. Jerry West get a third team involved because he doesn't have the assets and try to get Kawhi with the Los Angeles Clippers.
Or even if, and when you say slip through the cracks, or if they can't get a third team involved, and neither team pulls off the trade this year, and the Lakers' belief is, we think Ingram's going to be an all-star. We want to keep him. We are not going to trade Brandon Ingram for one extra year of Kawhi Leonard. Okay, I get that. But you sure as hell would trade Brandon Ingram for a career of Kawhi Leonard. And so if you don't, if you want to roll the dice, you are no longer rolling the dice on getting Kawhi. You're rolling the dice on being able to compete for a championship while you have LeBron. Because while there are a lot of big-time free agents available next year, none of them have asserted that they want to go to the city of Los Angeles like he has. Two of them play for the team you're trying to beat in Klay and KD. And we just, yeah, you can make the argument Klay's dad played for the Lakers. Maybe he'll, there's, but if the Warriors win another title this year, I can make a strong argument. The whole crew will say, let's go for four in a row.
Yes.
Jordan never did it. Kobe never did it. Shaq never did it. LeBron never. No one has done that since Russell Celtics. Like, so if you are, it to me would be an enormous gamble. We started off talking Vegas. It'd be an enormous gamble to say, we're just going to get Kawhi in free agency. I think Ingram can be a really good player. It is not to me worth the risk of never getting Kawhi. I said yesterday, and I think you agreed, if I'm building a team to beat Golden State, my number one pick is LeBron James. My number two pick is Kawhi Leonard. You already got the first. The second is on the trade block. If you need to move mountains to get him, I think you move mountains.
And even if you don't get rid of Ingram, the Lakers obviously still have so much more to offer than the Clippers do. Nothing's changed on that front, correct?
Yeah, nothing's changed, but the Lakers might feel like, oh, well, there's nowhere else he can go. And the Clippers with Jerry West, you have to understand Jerry West is trying to do everything that he can. And they have informed Kawhi and his camp, listen, don't give up on us. We are trying to move that mountain that Nick talked about.
All right, we'll keep talking about that. But coming up on the other side, a little football. Is Cam Newton on the verge of returning to MVP form? There is someone in his camp that thinks so. That's next on First Things First. Talk some football now. A lot of NFL folk waiting to see which Cam Newton shows up to camp this season. The super athletic three-time Pro Bowler and league MVP back in 2015. or the quarterback whose completion percentage and passer rating have been inconsistent? Einhorn Finkel, Finkel Einhorn. Cam's got a new offensive coordinator in Norv Turner, and Turner's got a new plan for Cam Newton.
The one thing that I think when you look at it that we're going to work hard to help him is he has a number of games, a large number of games, where his quarterback rating is as high as anyone's. It's in the high 90s, low 100s. But in the middle of that, of a 16-game season, he has those four or five games where that rating is not very good. And that obviously makes your average not as good as you'd like. So what we're going to try to work hard for is eliminate the peaks and the valleys, you know, and try to, on a weekly basis, make it more consistent. And I think that'll help us offensively be more consistent, and certainly will help him.
You know, CeCe, we talk a lot on this show about athletes and their ability to change as they get a little bit later in their career, and they're willing to change, right? It's not just if they can change, but if they want to change. Which area does Cam Newton really need to improve on the most?
Well, his overall fundamentals. His footwork tends to get poor in the pocket. He has such great arm strength that he can be late as far as his feet being set because his arm is so strong. So his mechanics, when he gets under the gun, sometimes they fail him. So I could see why Norv Turner, it's not the high games as far as passing rating that they're worried about. They're worried about the low ones. It's like a golfer. It's how good are your bad shots? Are your bad shots penalty where they went into the water, or they shots that go into the woods where you can actually find your ball and you can still advance it closer to the green? So with Cam, his mistakes, I mean, his mistakes with the football, you would not expect from a quarterback who has the type of experience that Cam has and has the overall throwing ability. So it's a combination of his fundamentals are poor, and Cam is not a guy that trusts throwing the ball into open areas. He likes to see the wide receiver flash open, and then he tries to put some extra sauce on the ball, which a lot of times gets him into trouble. If he could get his fundamentals tighter, where he can also anticipate where the wide receivers are going to be, which all the great quarterbacks have, not relying on his athleticism, but anticipation. That's what Norv Turner is talking about in trying to demand getting from Cam Newton compared to what Mike Shula, his previous offensive coordinator, had Cam trying to do.
7 years under his belt, going into year eight. How optimistic are you, or should the public be, that he would make any wholesale significant changes on things that are it's things you would assume he's been drilled on and worked on from the very beginning? Things like fundamentals, anticipation, throwing guys open instead of waiting for guys to get open.
I think 7 years is important for people to know. He was with one coordinator, but a lot of times too, when you get a guy like Cam Newton, when he came in, Heisman Trophy winner with all the fanfare, top pick in the draft, you try to run a system that's conducive to not only what he can learn, but what he likes to do. And it transferred over to the team being able to win. But that's also with they've had great defenses to be able to help them win. So part of your career, you might have babysitted that star player, which I do believe that they did in Carolina. They didn't force him to have better anticipation. They didn't do that. They did things that were comfortable for him as far as the RPOs compared to being just a straight, pure drop back. Read the defense and release the football. They haven't demanded that. So I think there's a tremendous opportunity for Cam right now in his career to be able to make those adjustments, and I believe that he can do it.
Here's the thing that for me is so frustrating at times about Cam, but also one of the reasons he's one of my favorite players to watch. I don't remember. I was trying to think when I saw we were going to talk about this today. If there's a quarterback, take the running out of it. We know there's never been a quarterback with his size, skill. Like, let's pretend he never runs the football. There's still never been quite a quarterback like him that I remember whose peaks are as good as anybody in the league. When he says high 90s, low 100s quarterback rating, that's actually underselling it. He had four or five games last year where he had quarterback ratings north of 120. That's Aaron Rodgers-esque, right? But his valleys are Sage Rosenfels. Like was that what Jeff George was like? But Jeff George's peaks weren't as often as Cam's and not quite as high. Like, and we shouldn't be comparing him to like guys of that ilk, right? Not a number one overall pick.
Well, it says something if you watch Cam play and you bring up a guy who I played with in Jeff George. It speaks to the level of, wow, what type of arm talent. But wow, tremendous amount of disappointment.
But we talk about whether Cam will want to change and work on his fundamentals. If you break that down, that means what? That means he has to come in and what, spend more time learning a little bit more of the offense, like going back over things that he's already learned. I mean, can you get more specific about what?
Well, this
that
is the
means?
Thing about it. Norv's going to teach a different way. I also played under Norv my last year with the Miami Dolphins, where Norv was the offensive coordinator there. Now he's one of the great coordinators, one of the great teachers, and if you look at what Norv does with an offense when he gets there, or quarterbacks when he gets there, and he forces changes, the best quarterback to look at is Troy Aikman. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, let the ball go. Either skinny post, bang 8, those type of things. He's going to get that in Cam's repertoire. Compared to just relying on your athletic ability, no. Rely on what the defense is showing you and rely on the talent of the people around you compared to your athletic ability. I believe that will be the emphasis for Norv Turner.
And here's the thing. Because I said throw the rushing out when I was talking about his peaks and valleys, but now I'm going to bring the rushing back in. Because he is unlike any quarterback we've ever seen as far as productivity rushing the football and ability to stay healthy despite running the football like that. Since he came into the league, he's top 20 in rushing yards. Not for quarterbacks, for players. Since he came into the league, he's number one in yards per carry amongst players. Number three in rushing touchdowns. Because that element is still in his game, and last year he was at his career high for rushing yards, so it's still near the top of his game, he doesn't have to be a perfect passer because he adds that extra element. What he has to do is avoid the games where he loses them the game. He has to avoid those. When Norv Turner says valleys, they are craters. They are canyons. Like Cam's bad games and his worst throws, you wonder, like, what was he seeing? It's like the thing you said about Tiger when he was missing the putts. Like, does he need his eyes checked? Like, I love watching Cam, but when he's off, it looks as bad as any everyday starter we have. If he can just eliminate that, he's still going to have some of those peaks, and the rushing component is so valuable. That's where he can get back to where he was a couple years ago.
We talked about this from the beginning. A guy with that kind of athletic prowess, it's hard to teach them to not rely on your athletic ability.
Yeah, I think also, because we all think that, man, it's really, really hard to change.
Yeah.
But, Jenna, you and I talked about it this morning. Right now, he's going to be forced to change. We have so many outstanding quarterbacks in the NFC. The ownership in Carolina changed. Now, they're coming in under a different regime. They don't have to babysit Cam. Norv Turner's there. You got a new owner there. It should be a new start also in his brain. So that also gives me a little bit more confidence that Cam will make these adjustments.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up on the other side, is LeBron James a lock for his fifth MVP trophy? It's next on First Things First. Baseball's biggest stars for an unforgettable show from the nation's capital. The MLB All-Star Game Tuesday at 7:30 Eastern, only on Fox, or stream it live on the Fox Sports app. And oh, guess who'll be there? We will. Check us out Monday and Tuesday live from Nationals Park.
You said the biggest stars, one of the literally and figuratively biggest stars in the sports world, I'll leave it at that, might be joining us as well. Let you think about who that might be. Don't put it out there yet. We'll see, because it's not confirmed. Someone see you introduced me to in a hotel lobby once.
Hey.
There you go. So excited for the shows Monday and Tuesday.
It seemed really scandalous.
No,
welcome back
scandalous.
To First Things First. We're going viral. Recently retired tight end Martellus Bennett posted a video on his Twitter account of him playing at the Drew League. Scored 16 points. Not too bad.
Very good high school basketball player. Obviously still loves the game.
Down in A-Leaf, Texas, right? I mean, that's basically right where inside of Houston. And that's what we were talking about, Jenna. Look at Drew League. Look at all those open seats. You just walk in there.
Just watch.
Just walk in there, hang out, free admission.
But you have to know which is the good game to go to. Like,
No, Drew League, there's only one.
Oh, okay.
Drew League, there's only one court, one thing. Like, you
and
go in there
it.
And they play all day. Oh. Yeah, there's games all day. Marty B., when he's taking a break from writing his children's books.
Guest on our show.
Playing a little hoops.
Yep.
That's cool, man. I miss
What's
that.
Up, C?
I miss
Oh, nothing. All good. He's one of my favorite players.
Yeah.
On and off the field.
Good guy.
Guy's got a lot of good stuff going on.
And And aren't you going to be a voice in one of his books? Or?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We got to come up. We got to reconnect on that.
Absolutely.
Hey, time for some stories to start your morning. Brought to you by Ace, the helpful place. When you add the best player in the league to your team, your win total is most likely to go up. The Lakers won 35 games last season, but Vegas has the over-under for LeBron's new team set at 50.5. Nick, you think the Lakers will win more than 50 games this season?
I do. Here's something people should know. They increased their win total by 9 games each of the last 2 years.
Yes.
17 to 26, 26 to 35. Now, the next 9 would be much harder because once you get into the playoff contention, those wins are harder to come by. But they added LeBron. I also believe they're going to end up adding Kawhi, and this win total will creep up closer to 54, 55 once they do that. But even without Kawhi, I think LeBron James and 4 competent human beings can win 50 basketball games. You know why I know that? Because the Cavs won 50 basketball games this year. I know that was out east, but this Laker team's better. So, yeah, I like them to win more.
Well, I disagree with you as far as LeBron and the 4 competent people last year. There were some games. They weren't competent at all. Sure. Game number 1, JR, timeout.
Yeah. Sticking with the NBA over-unders, coming off a league-best 65 wins, Vegas has the Rockets over-under next season set at 56.5. See, do you see the Rockets having a drop-off in their win total?
I definitely see a drop-off. I'm with Vegas on this one. I do believe that it will go down, but I don't think it decreases their chances of beating Golden State. I believe because last year's regular season was far more important. Chris Paul's coming there, new pieces. Let's figure out, man, home court advantage I thought was very important. If Chris Paul's healthy, I don't think it's as important. So it will go down, but they do have the potential to get to the finals, which they couldn't do last year.
Listen, I think I don't think they'll win 65 games.
Yes.
I think they'll win more than 56, though. That's another over I would hit. I think they will be high 50s, low 60s. I also think because Golden State is going to, I think, run away with home court this year, actually, they can maybe be more judicious with Chris Paul's minutes late in the year because they're not chasing the 65 wins or home court and make sure he's fully rested going in the playoffs.
Moving on to baseball now, Albert Pujols hit 2 home runs last night to take his career total to 630 home runs. Pujols is now tied with Ken Griffey Jr. for 6th place on the all-time list. Nick, how impressive is this accomplishment for the 38-year-old Pujols?
It's just a good reminder. I'm glad we got this on the show. It's a good reminder that Albert Pujols had arguably the greatest opening 10 years of a career of any hitter ever. This is an all-time great. And he just tied arguably the greatest clean player of the last 35 years in Ken Griffey Jr. and my favorite baseball player ever. These are 2 all-timers. Pujols probably going to end up at like 650. That's unbelievable.
Do you know Ken Griffey Jr. and I grew up about 20 miles apart from each other?
I did not know
his
that.
His dad was in Cincinnati.
Yep.
All right. I became a huge friends with his dad and the family. So I watched him and all the other kids. He's got a brother named Craig. Went to Ohio State, played DB there. So I've been big friends. You talking about an athletic family? Oh, man. Pujols, tremendous accomplishment, though. People have forgotten about him since he went out west.
Right out of Maple Woods Community College, Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, there's some good things come from community college.
We will end with some tennis. Serena Williams defeated Julia Gerges yesterday to advance to her 10th Wimbledon final. This just 10 months after suffering life-threatening complications while giving birth to her daughter. Cece, how impressed are you with Serena's run?
What a tremendous accomplishment. I'm glad we can get this into the show. People don't want to talk about tennis a lot, especially women's tennis. But what we're watching is, I mean, one of the greatest athletes ever, if not the greatest athlete ever. Is she the greatest female athlete? I think she has that crown and has it in spades. But is she the greatest athlete ever? She should be included in the conversations at this advanced age, having a tough pregnancy. That she also won the Australian Open when she was pregnant. So now on the other side of things, she's 10 months removed and she's in the finals at Wimbledon. An amazing feat, and she should be honored. When you look at all the disparities between men and women, how much money they make, it shouldn't be for us. That's Wimbledon and the tennis and the tourist problem, but it shouldn't be as far as optics and attention.
And conversation.
Yeah, we should be that, and I'm so glad that we're talking about this now.
Listen, Serena Williams is the, I don't know if she's the best athlete ever. I do know this. She's the most dominant in her field of any athlete I've ever seen. And she has the record for Grand Slam titles in the Open era, but there's kind of an asterisk there because Margaret Court won 13 Margaret Court's got 24 Grand Slam titles if you don't care about the era. Serena is going for her 24th here this Saturday at Wimbledon. A tough pregnancy. I want people to understand what happened. She has an emergency C-section. She then, because she is so in tune with her body, self-diagnoses, I am getting blood clots. Gets out of her hospital bed because she doesn't want her mother's in the room to get nervous. Goes to the nurse, says, I need this type of scan with this type of imaging so you can see it. The nurse doesn't believe her. The doctor then tries to give her what she says is a regular scan. She says, no, I need a Doppler. And I might be getting some of the medical stuff wrong here. Self-diagnosis that she had blood clots that had moved up to her lungs. That can kill you. They fix that. She pops her C-section wound from coughing so much. She then has 6 weeks bed rest. And now she's going to potentially win Wimbledon? We do on sports talk shows all the time, Mount Rushmores. If you're doing a Mount Rushmore of all-time athletes, in my eyes, three spots are up for grabs. And you can make arguments for Bolt, Phelps, Jordan, LeBron, Ali, Jim Brown, Jim Thorpe, one spot on everyone's Mount Rushmore has to be this woman. She has been remarkable, and that doesn't even mention her story of a country club, rich white sport. Her and her sister coming out of Compton to do what they've done. She is unbelievable.
I was at a Wimbledon, U.S. Open a couple years back, and I was covering another match, and I heard, and I've watched many tennis matches. I go to U.S. Open every year, and I heard the most powerful, just consistent hitting of the ball, almost as if somebody was hitting against the wall. And I looked over, and it was Serena practicing. Mm-hmm. It was just her practice, and I was like, I'll watch for a minute or two. I'm sure she'll. It was the most consistent, the most powerful. This was just practicing before a round on a side court that I'd ever seen, that I'd ever appreciated. What she puts into the tiny little details of her game and her body to get her to the place where she is so she can go out and play and win the Australian Open, so she can come back and play Wimbledon. And such a lovely human being. I've interviewed many times.
Yeah, her and her sister. Her sister's even nicer.
Yeah. Really
and,
nice.
You know, I'm sure he'll like this. Richard Williams, he was right.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He was right.
He was absolutely right. Congrats to her. With no disrespect to her opponent, I hope she wins on Saturday. I hope she gets her 24th.
All right, let's move on now. Some breaking news. LeBron James is good at basketball. Okay, let's move on from that. And with the new car smell still lingering on the King, officially signing with the Lakers only 4 days ago, expectations are already as high as they come. Oddsmakers have LeBron as the favorite to take home his fifth NBA MVP this season, ahead of guys like Anthony Davis, Giannis, last year's MVP, James Harden. So, Nick, how impressive is LeBron being the MVP favorite entering his 16th year in the league?
Well, it's never happened in basketball history mm-hmm. that a guy post-year 15 would be the favorite to win MVP. And it's kind of crazy when you think about it. Rich Paul, his agent, was interviewed at Summer League yesterday, I think. Whenever it was, I saw the interview yesterday. And he made a point that's a pretty basic point, but it's one that we should absorb, which is, where are most guys in year 16? Rich Paul made the point, either out of the league, commentators are saying, I wish he'd retire. Like he's kind of, you know, he's tarnishing how I want to remember him. Or they are taking a much lesser role as a complimentary player.
Yes.
He's not only the number one free agent available this offseason, he's the best odds to win most valuable player in year 16. It's going to be an unfair standard, see, for the guys coming after him, for the guys younger, Durant or Giannis or Anthony mm-hmm. Davis, because if they do what every other player, except for basically Karl Malone, has done in NBA history, which is around year 13, start to trail off, we're gonna remember this guy still being the best player in the league this long.
Right, but those are the things that you have to do if you're going to be in that rarefied air. If he's ever going to be, I mean, he's in the conversation with Jordan, but if the conversation just like Michael Jordan, he changed how you looked at NBA players. Once he got those three championships, took that time off, ended up getting three more and the MVPs, it changed the way we evaluated Kobe, changed the way we evaluate LeBron. So these are the types of things that LeBron is going to have to do to me, too. And I read this. Someone suggested that shows like this, we should stop having the conversation, who's the best player compared to who's your favorite player. And my favorite player was Michael Jordan. And it's hard to really include players that you didn't see, but my favorite player was Michael Jordan. Your favorite player is LeBron James. And in doing what they've done in making us be their favorite, they changed the paradigm. They changed the conversation. They did things that people wouldn't see done. So that's what LeBron's going to have to do. He's going to have to win a championship with his third team. He's going to have to win an MVP at an advanced age. And it lets you know what Vegas thinks about his change from Los Angeles to Cleveland, because if he had decided in free agency that he was going to stay in Cleveland, I can guarantee you he would not be number one or number two on those odds for the MVP. They think in the change of scenery, LeBron will be motivated in a different way. And I like the fact that he is the favorite to win the MVP. If the NBA players were having a draft, LeBron James would be the first player taken more often than any other player. So I like that Vegas is up on it in year number 16.
And real quick, before we get to the list as a whole, 5 years ago, here was the top five MVP, the year KD won it. KD 1, LeBron 2, of course. Blake Griffin 3, Joakim Noah 4. Think about that. Blake and Joakim came into the league well after LeBron. They peaked then, and then their career. Joakim Noah, does he play anymore? I know the Knicks are still paying him $18 million a year. Blake Griffin is considered one of the worst contracts in the league, and a guy we wonder, since he's in the East, can he make an all-star team? Those guys came in after LeBron, and they have aged quicker than LeBron. Like, it is, we've never seen something like this on a longevity and durability scale.
What would you guys say is more impressive, LeBron winning an MVP title in year 16 or LeBron getting the Lakers their first title? Which is a more impressive
feat? Oh, the Lakers title is bigger. It's bigger because so many other things would have to happen. I mean, LeBron's going to finish 1, 2, or 3 in the MVP. That's what he's done anyway. So, but the Lakers with a title, a team that hadn't been in the playoff in 5 years. I mean, worst NBA record over that tenure since Dr. Buss has died. Man, that's when their success. Man, absolutely. Jenny Buss getting this Lakers team, their 17th, that would be the biggest feat.
Typically, I would say MVP, because that's an individual accomplishment as opposed to a team accomplishment where you can't just give it to one guy. But as long as the Warriors are the Warriors, whomever knocks them off, if anyone ever does, as they have their present, the KD version of them, that will go down. Forget biggest feat for LeBron. One of the greatest feats in NBA history. So given who he would have to go through, because the one thing that I will say is winning MVPs, you could argue, the one thing in the NBA that's gotten easier since KD went to the Warriors is winning MVPs.
Yeah, because two of the players are canceled.
Because two of the top five guys aren't going to win anymore. Like KD and Steph, who had won three of the last four when they got together, they had won three in a row when they got together because it went KD, Steph. Those guys now can't really win it anymore.
Right.
So the field is winnowed. And I saw my guy Giannis, third on that list. That might be the best value bet.
Let's take a break. Coming up, the Hall of Fame is moving on without Terrell Owens.
Ooh.
That's next. This is First Things First. The NFL Hall of Fame ceremony in August will be one chair short. Terrell Owens announced last month that he would opt out of attending the ceremony and instead give his speech at his alma mater, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. And according to the Hall's executive director, they will not individually acknowledge T.O. during enshrinement weekend in Canton, Ohio. Chris Carter, as a member of the Hall, what was your reaction to this?
I mean, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. I mean, the Hall had no other choice. I mean, just to put his name with the rest of the guys, because really what is a celebration, it's a celebration of football, but it's a celebration of the other players and executive Bobby Bethford. It's a celebration of their careers and the people that were important to them. So when you've decided that you're not going to come to the celebration, I don't know what other recourse that the Hall had, because the truth of the matter, the attention should be on the other players. We should be talking about Randy Moss's career, Ray Lewis's career. We should be talking about Jerry Kramer, the great Green Bay Packer, who finally got in. That's who we should be talking about. Terrell put them in a position where they had no other choice. So I'm looking forward to going to the weekend and celebrating with my brothers that are in the Hall and celebrating this tremendous class that all the other guys decided that they wanted to be there and be a part of it.
So this is one that is a very interesting dichotomy in the reaction that I saw. Like I said, I didn't ask Chris. I wanted to wait and hear what he said on TV, but I saw Joy Taylor tweet about this. Why does that matter? Her brother Jason is a Hall of Famer, and she said, she made it seem as if Jason feels similarly to Chris. And when I say the dichotomy, the people that aren't Hall of Famers, a lot of the media members, the reaction has been, my initial reaction was, listen, T.O. is being T.O. He's being petty. He's being selfish. He is taking away from a greater moment. But the Hall didn't have to meet petty with petty. Like, they could have simply said, Terrell Owens not here today. Here's his stats. This is this member of the, you know, the 300 and whatever, 12th member of the Hall of Fame, 90-second highlight video, and move on. When you say they couldn't have, would that have bothered, as a Hall of Famer, would that, if they had done that, would that have bothered you? Would you think that's the
wrong? It wouldn't have bothered me, but there's no need to take 90 seconds away from the other guys, because it's about the people that are there. All right, so why take the 90 seconds? We'll split it up amongst the other guys. He decided he didn't want to be there. It's not like he can't be there. He doesn't want to be there. So he doesn't want to accept the honor. No problem. They should move on without him.
As a Hall of Famer, because listen, whatever your relationship with Terrell is or isn't, you for a few years have gone on TV and whenever asked about it before the vote said, listen, this guy obviously should be in the Hall of Fame. Like, he shouldn't have to wait. We've shown this, what I think is a really cool graphic. 1,000 catches, 10,000 yards, 100 touchdowns. Here's the 7 guys to ever do it. The history of this sport. Like, now Larry's not eligible yet. He's still playing. But you had to wait a bunch of years. They thankfully didn't make Randy wait. But, like, they've made everyone on that list wait, I believe, except for Randy and Tony Gonzalez, right?
Yeah, and Jerry, of course.
That was an oversight. Jerry was the last first ballot wide receiver Hall of Famer until Randy got it this year. And you went on TV always and said T.O. should get in. But it also, since he's made this decision, from every person I've talked to or I've seen that is a member of the Hall or associated with it, they seem almost, I don't want to say personally offended, but truly bothered that he is doing this about this weekend. Can you explain if I got that right? And if so, why there is that almost emotional reaction to what he's doing?
My reaction is not emotional. I'm not bothered by it. Like, I'm not surprised at all by it either. But Terrell, if he would look back at the history of the Hall, there's heartbreak every Super Bowl Saturday when guys don't get in. He act like his tears are more important than other guys' tears. Lynn Swann waited. I'm talking about a champion. A great man, a great American, he had to wait. Harry Carson, man, he stomped and screamed. Harry Carson told him, take me off the list. The Hall of Fame refused to take him off the list. He's one of the greatest players. Eventually, he got in. Every year, I see Harry Carson there. And I remember a great conversation that I have after being passed over five times, got in on my sixth. And that was with Jim Trotter. He was the first person that, as a selector, that I saw once I got into the auditorium. And he said, Chris, you have the choice. You have the choice that you can either harbor all these thoughts that you had for all these years when you should have been in the Hall. You're right. Or you can enjoy the moment and be celebrated with the other greats. I chose to take door number 2 because it's easy to do the other way. All right? Terrell's taken away his moment. He's taken that moment away from everyone who coached him, everyone who played with him, and that's his own decision. I'm glad the Hall decided to do what they did. Now, if I felt like the Hall was wrong and he should be recognized, I would be the first to say it.
Do you think the Hall regrets this decision to include Terrell Owens?
No, they're obligated to vote in the best football players ever. They're obligated to do that. And they got it right by having Terrell to be selected. So his bus will be in the Hall, but he's decided he doesn't want to come to the celebration.
When you say he's depriving his coaches or his family or whatever of that moment, that's something that I find really interesting, because I think about, because I know you so well, I think about your Hall of Fame speech and you pointing out your close friends, you talking about your brothers and seeing a man who I now know, your brother John, I think it's fair to say, crying. And he was so taken aback by the things you said about him. Your high school coach is there. What it means for the other people who don't get to be the Hall of Famers, that moment, what T.O. is taking from them, as you put it, can you explain what you're talking about?
There's so many people that help you in a career like this that you can't actually get up there with a clear conscience and be like, you know something? I'm bigger, stronger, faster. I worked harder than everyone else. I made all the right decisions. There's no one that can say that. Every story in the Hall is a tremendous journey of their football life. And to me, I'm always amazed that there was always forks in the road. Like, their lives were not Hall of Fame lives. Like, there was a chance and opportunity for them to be marginalized by bad decisions or not wanting to put forth the effort. And there's so many people, man, that pick you up and wash your pads. And no one's screaming their name. They don't make millions of dollars. But this is their moment that you can acknowledge them and let people give them some recognition. But you'll never have that weekend. That weekend is gone. Because if he decides to ever go to the Hall, you don't have no speaking part. You don't get to say nothing. It's about that new class. So right now it's about the 18 class. Next year, it'll be about the 19 class. In 20, it'll be about the 20 class. So those 15 minutes you have to speak, it is a wrap. It's over with. He'll never get those 15 minutes back. And I can guarantee you, he will regret it. Because that is one of the most powerful moments. I call it the heaven of football. And you get a chance to have a speaking part, and you've decided to give that away because, oh, they didn't let you in year number one. Alan Page didn't get in either, first ballot Hall of Fame. Can you imagine that? As great as his. And there's so many other stories of guys. So I just believe he missed a tremendous opportunity.
You said if he comes, you know, if he shows up in 19 or 20 or whatever, he doesn't have a speaking part. If he, as he, now he's a grown man, so I'm not anticipating this, but if at some point he has a change of heart or philosophy, is conciliatory in any way, do you think the Hall of Famers, because you talk about this brotherhood, you guys do as much as you can, I don't want to say to protect each other, but to make sure if a guy's down on his luck, help him out. If a guy needs some help to, you know, put a hand out, can he recover or salvage that relationship, which he, from at the very first moment he got in, or right before he got in, I guess technically, he instead of putting a hand out, put his hands back? Is that permanent now?
There's only 320 of us. There's less than 140 of us alive. He'll always be my brother in the Hall, regardless if he wants to acknowledge it or not. So he's got a birthright with some of the greatest men who I've ever met. And if he decides not to take advantage of his birthright, that's on him. It's not on me. But he will always be my Hall of Fame brother. He will always be that.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up on the other side, was LeBron's decision to go to L.A. the easiest of his career? Next on First Things First. First Things First, we're joined by NBA analyst Sarah Kustoff. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing
we're
well.
Good
to see you.
Great to see you.
Also sideline reporter. Don't forget.
I'm never going to forget that again. I forgot that again. Also sideline reporter. All around, great gal.
Sideline NFL sideline reporter. That's the key.
You guys are looking out for me.
Expanding portfolio.
If you could just write down all the things you do, I'll just read that right from there.
Make money moves. Let's do it.
I think most people would agree, Sarah, it's not easy to sign arguably the best player ever to play basketball. So when Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka signed LeBron James on Monday, a tip of the cap to the Lakers front office seemed reasonable. But when you are the actual logo for the NBA, you're not impressed easily. Jerry West weighed in on the Lakers landing LeBron by saying, quote, LeBron was not a tough free agent signing. LeBron wanted to come to L.A. and he wanted to come to the Lakers, period. He has a family he's thinking about. He has a home here. He has won He has a son whom he wants to keep in one school in Los Angeles. He'll be a celebrity out here, sure. But it's a place where once in a while he can get lost, be himself. You can't do that everywhere. So, Sarah, is Magic Johnson getting a little too much credit, do you think, with all this?
I love Jerry West. I love that he said all of this. Yeah. I love this rivalry we're going to see between the Clippers and the Lakers. And I do believe that there is a lot of truth behind everything that he said. We heard LeBron talk about his family, how important that was in his decision. So I do think all of these factors heavily weighed into why LeBron wanted to go there. But Magic Johnson is Magic Johnson. And I think him being with the Lakers, I think the fact that he was there, that he is the president of the team, that the cachet that the Los Angeles Lakers have, and then you add in Magic Johnson now being in that role with the team, mm-hmm. played a major factor in LeBron choosing there. And so I'm not sure that I can speculate what LeBron would have done if Magic Johnson was not in that role, but I do believe that he was... Maybe it was easy, but it's not easy being Magic Johnson. It's not easy being the person that he is, the character he is. And I think that that played a major role in trust, in understanding the direction of the franchise, in why LeBron additionally wanted to make sure that this was his next stop.
All right, so a couple things. And I have the utmost respect for Jerry West. There's a lot of the old-time players that I'm like, man, they couldn't get college scholarships today. Jerry West is not one of those guys. Jerry West was a bad man in the 60s. Jerry West would be a bad man today. Like, and his resume as an executive is unimpeachable. But those comments would have made more sense from 28 other GMs. Not the only other GM that offers LeBron the same city that Magic does. He's like, oh, his kids wants to go to high school here. Where would he go to high school if he played for the Clippers? His kids, his family owns a home here. Well, what home would he live in if he played for the Clippers? Like, so part of that rings hollow. Like, you do have the Lakers' exceptionalism of the cachet of the organization. Yes. And that, of course, plays a part of it. But where I don't think Magic and Rob Pelinka are getting quite enough credit on this is... Maybe LeBron was, for the last couple years, leaning towards going to L.A. They could have screwed it up, though. Let's not forget, they unloaded Jordan Clarkson's contract, what, by the way, to Cleveland, to free up more cap space. They drafted well the last 2 years in Ball and Ingram to give you assets where a Kawhi trade is plausible. Last offseason, they resisted the urge to sign long-term deals. Instead, they give Kentavious Caldwell-Pope a one-year deal. Like, I think LeBron, two decisions ago, instead of Miami, I think he probably, a couple years before he made the decision, wanted to go to the Knicks. And the Knicks screwed it up. The Knicks had that cachet. Dwayne Wade could have left and gone to New York with him. But the Knicks screwed it up. The Lakers were patient, and they gave LeBron, even if he was already leaning there, every reason to end up going there.
Jerry West also, he did have the opportunity to present the same thing to Lakers because they are the other team in Los Angeles, but they just don't have the history. Why would LeBron James go to the Clippers over the Lakers? Like, that wouldn't make sense. No decision like this is easy because you can mess up that decision. Now, Jerry does make some good points as far as who LeBron is in his life going forward. Los Angeles is one of the few places that he is going to be able to have, as far as you call it, a normal life. He will be able to hide away because there are so many stars. But the branding to LeBron is important. And the only brand of basketball in Los Angeles is the Lakers. They got 16 championships. There is no comparison. But it's nice that Jerry's able to get into the conversation. Now, to Jerry's credit, if he can pull off the Kawhi, because there is a rivalry there, if he can pull off the Kawhi and he's working day and night, trying to be able to do that, he needs some help from a third team, then that would be able to get Jerry West back into the conversation. When we used to talk about him all the time. When he was in Memphis, in the front office, we talked about him. He was with Golden State. We talked about him. We didn't know where Jerry West was. So he let people know, I'm in Los Angeles, even though LeBron decided to go to the Lakers.
And Jerry said every single thing about Los Angeles without actually talking about the Lakers' mystique. And he, more than anyone, knows what that means.
He helped build it.
Yeah.
Well, if Jerry and Magic were flipped, would LeBron still be a Laker?
Yes. I think so.
Yeah, Jerry wouldn't blow it. I mean,
no.
we We have, if everything was equal, we have more confidence in Jerry West than we do in Magic Johnson just because of years of a track record. So it's beyond just who Magic is. It really goes back to this was not easy. And it's not about trying to land LeBron. It started 2 years ago, almost 2 years ago, when Jenny Buss decides to. First, Kobe needs to retire, all right? That was one of the, like, let Kobe needs to go off to the pasture. But last year, when she fired her brother, that was one of the gutsiest decisions that she's ever made since her dad passed away. Because you have to realize the dad passed away, and also they're going to the bottom of the NBA. They came together. The dad passed away. He's been gone, I think, this will be his sixth season, and they've been one of the worst teams in the NBA since then. Her firing her brother and hiring Pelinka and Magic, that's what got them to the day that Magic could wait outside LeBron's house. That big decision as far as firing her brother was huge.
I also think, and to your question, which I think is true, both Jerry West and Magic Johnson are legends of the game. LeBron can attach himself to either one of those men. I personally think, too, the Lakers struggles the last five seasons. I think LeBron loves that. I think Magic loves that. I think both of them embrace the idea of being able to bring
it's
this franchise.
It's like a clean slate. Yeah. And they get to have full ownership over whatever success comes to that organization.
Absolutely.
And it goes with the track record of decisions LeBron has made. I understand in Miami he brought Chris Bosh with him, and I'm not discounting that. But he went to a team that hadn't won a playoff series in 4 years.
Yes.
He was drafted by Cleveland because they were the worst team in the NBA. When he went back to them, they had been one of the worst teams in the NBA mm-hmm. and the worst team over the 4 years he was gone. He's never gone to a ready-made contender. Let me rephrase it. He's never gone to a team that the previous year was a contender. Everywhere he goes, he makes them a ready-made contender to a degree. And when he brought Bosh with him in Miami, of course, that was a great basketball team. I'm not discounting that at all. But the other thing that I want to give Jeannie Buss credit for is people do a really bad job of remembering what they said about things and certainly what other people said about things. A lot of people scoffed at Magic Johnson being hired for the job that he was hired at. People talked about, oh, so Magic, he's going to be up on the analytics. So Magic, mm-hmm. he's going to be scouting guys in Europe. Magic Johnson wants to sit in these high school or college gyms. And it was missing the forest for the trees. They hired Magic Johnson because he has one thing no other person in the 7 billion people on this earth can offer. They're not Magic Johnson. They're not the guy that, while LeBron might be chasing Jordan's ghost, LeBron, I would, if you ask him in his most honest moment, the guy who he watched growing up, who he plays, who he admired the playing style the most, it's Magic Johnson. Not to mention the business stuff. Not to mention the different things he's done outside of basketball, which trump almost any player ever.
Yes, also Pelinka. I mean, that's Kobe's agent. He had never had a job like this. So there was plenty of doubt between Magic taking over mm-hmm. as basketball operations and Pelinka. What kind of, it was like, man, what's Kobe? I thought they got rid of Kobe. Now they got Kobe's agent running the team.
Yes.
Kobe's shadow will always be over the team. So to this point, they have done a tremendous job.
All right, Sarah, we'll see you a little bit later on the show.
Yeah,
stick around. Coming up, who was to blame for the New York Giants' 3-win season last year? That's next on First Things First. The best kind. To all you New York Giants fans out there, I apologize in advance for reminding you that your team finished 3-13 last season and that Ben McAdoo was your coach for most of that. Fingers were pointed at McAdoo's decisions. Eli Manning's poor play, Odell Beckham's antics. McAdoo was fired along with GM Jerry Reese. Yesterday, McAdoo came out and said, quote, I needed to be better for Odell Beckham personally as a coordinator and head coach. Cece, what was your reaction to McAdoo's comments?
As a coach, a coach can only do so much. So I can understand Ben's taking some of the blame for it because he's the coach. And a coach, I could see a coach, but a lot of the responsibility is shared. You know, when I had the greatest results in my career, a lot of it had to do with me making the right decision and then the organization trying to support me trying to do the right thing. It's an organization. The organization's always trying to do the right thing. So it's a lot of times it's up to the professional to be able to put themselves in a position that the organization can support. So yes, I can understand him saying, I wish I would have done this. Was his first time being a head coach. And I'm pretty certain that he hadn't coached a player as talented and as emotional as OBJ. So he did make some mistakes. But OBJ will tell you, he's told me this, he made some mistakes. He was immature. He overreacted to some things. So there was fault on both sides. Ben McAnupian's first time as a head coach, and OBJ has admitted to me that he wished he would have handled a few things in a different way.
This is an odd thing, because this was a very interesting interview he gave. He said the Eagles and Cowboys are going to take a step back. Washington is still Washington, so I like the Giants' chances. He said they overpaid for Nate Solder. Eric Flowers can't bend, so he took shot. Like, it was typically guys that just got fired from coaching, maybe didn't have the greatest resume, like not the longest resume going into it. They're very judicious and careful with what they say because they're looking for their next job. He was very honest about whatever he thought. The one thing that he said in the interview that I thought he was too hard on himself on was this. Like, I think Odell was going to be Odell no matter who his coach was. Tom Coughlin's very different than this guy. And Odell was the same. Like, if Odell is going to change, if he wants to change, if he needs to change, those are all things that are going to be up to him. And if he needs to change, it's going to be up to the new regime and really the media, which kind of sets the template to a degree. But Odell was, when he was healthy, was as productive under him as he was under Coughlin. Like, there was no drop-off there. Odell's been a great player no matter who his coach has been. And the sideline stuff has been the same no matter who the coach has been. So I don't know what he thinks he could have done more for Odell other than help him not break his leg, which obviously he couldn't actually help him not break his leg.
You know Pat Shurmur, and we've watched him. I mean, do you think there'll be any difference in the way Odell approaches the game, other than that he wants to try to change under Coughlin to McAdoo and now to Pat Shurmur?
I think he'll be very, very different. He's also at a different stage of his career. He did go from Tom Coughlin. You made a great point as far as Tom Coughlin being known as a disciplinarian and Ben McAdoo as the offensive coordinator. Typically, those relationships, if you have a tough guy like Tom Coughlin at the top, it's hard for another guy to be a tough guy. Like when we had Denny Green, Brian Billick did a great job of being able to fill in for what Denny was not. He knew that he didn't have the personality and as funny as Denny, but he was for about the X's and O's and what we had to do and things like that. He understood that. So there is a proper balance between the two. What Pat has is he has a new start. He has Odell also trying to prove that he's not this person that we saw in his first 4 years. And that contract and trying to get that money, if you don't think that has an effect on a human being, then you haven't been watching sports and how people perform and how people act in the last year of their contract.
The reason that I am not so optimistic that Odell is, I don't want to say ever, but anytime soon going to undergo some drastic changes. I was in that room at that house in Los Angeles talking with Odell and you and some of his friends, and he's talking to you about football, and then he's talking to both of us about his image and about the media. And I not to betray confidences, but I saw you say to him, man, every time you're on the back page for something other than the game, take $5 million off. He's like, you're like, every time, take a couple million off here. It's like every time you do it. And Odell met you at your eyes. I understand, Unc. I got it. Then he turns to me. He's like, and asked me, he's like, listen, you're a media guy. What do you think I can do? And I said, hey, I actually think some of the stuff you do is funny, but I'm the rare guy. Like, just if you're worried about the contract, then your play will speak for itself. And what did he do the first touchdown he scored? Yep. The thing that Jenna hated so much.
Got down on all fours.
He did. Not only did he not, you can argue he changed, but he changed. He went more extreme. It was ridiculous. And he knew better. And he didn't. It was in the moment. I don't know if you want to say couldn't help himself, whatever it was.
No, he couldn't control it.
And yeah. So if he was coming off an injury, not the significant one, but an injury that had frustrated him, that had worried him, and he scores an amazing touchdown, and that's what he does. And so, like, you always say, when you touch the stove, that's how you learn it. Man, if the day after you touch the stove and you burn yourself, you slam your hand down on the stove, then then you might just need to, like, take the stoves out the house. And so I don't know if Odell's going to change in that regard. I think the talent will speak for itself, though.
I think you make a good point, though. It's a big year for him. New head coach, new regime. You know, he has his quarterback that he likes. Like, mm-hmm. if there is ever a platform for which he could come out and, I don't want to say reinvent himself, but be the guy that's more focused on football mm-hmm. than the other stuff. The stage is set for him to do it because the Giants fans love him. They're forgiving fans. They want him to succeed. So who knows?
And he has a great opportunity. And we had a segment where we talked about T.O. And then we also talked about Randy Moss in the same conversation. He has a chance to do what both of them did. T.O., regardless of where he went, he was in San Francisco. Talked about his quarterback, talked about his teammate in a negative way. Went to Philadelphia. They got rid of him there. Did the same thing there. Went to Dallas. Did the same thing there. Or Randy Moss. And when his play went down in Oakland, he went with Bill Belichick. He changed mm-hmm. when he changed addresses. So now, even though they've changed coaches, can OBJ make that change like Moss did compared to the repetitive behavior of the other Hall of Famer?
Make that change. Coming up, does a former Cowboys great see a silver lining in the receiving corps? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Time for your World Cup wake up. France took down Belgium 1-0 to advance to their first World Cup final since 1998. Bunch of speedwalkers. Croatia beat England 2-1 in extra time to advance to their first ever World Cup final. France, Croatia squaring off on Sunday. For all the glory. Coverage begins at 10 a.m. Eastern on Fox. Guys, you excited for this matchup, CC?
No, I'm very excited, but we gave our picks about who we thought was going to be in the final.
Yeah.
We haven't given our picks about the final. I think Croatia's amazing run ends.
I think Croatia.
Yeah, I do.
I think they've got a storybook story going.
2-1 France, Mbappe with the winning goal. Cover of Sports Illustrated next week, if that's still a thing. I want it to still be a thing.
I'm going just for a great game. I'm not going to pick the final.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't have to. I've been going for a great game. It's been one of the greatest World Cups we've ever seen.
It has.
All right? Looking forward to watching it.
Well, listen, just because it'll be fun, I'm going to go with Croatia.
Oh!
Small little country, couple million people.
Appreciate you playing along.
Big stage. CC doesn't want to weigh in.
I love Chris Carter so much. I'm not going to pick the final. Why not? Because I don't have to. Why give yourself a chance to be wrong when it's not on the sheet? Nick, you invented this whole idea of picking the final. I will not do it. All right, fair enough.
So we're good?
I don't have no bloodline in France or Croatia. The reason why I picked Senegal was because my ancestors, 76% of them went there.
76% went there.
That's not how that works
it's
at all.
Not
three of me. Hey, guys, send me more paperwork so I can explain it.
Maybe so he can better understand.
Yeah.
76% of my ancestors went there. Like, he's a legacy admission to college.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so no friends.
When you
no
fly
Croatia.
In, there's a picture of CC. Yeah.
Just looking for a great game. Beautiful. Right here on Fox.
You're gonna probably
we'll be
get
watching
that.
It. On the app, Fox Go app.
Yep. Time for stories to start your morning brought to you by Ace the Helpful Place. Serena Williams beat Julia Gerges yesterday to advance to her 10th Wimbledon final. This just 10 months after suffering life-threatening complications while giving birth to her daughter. So impressive. Cece, how impressed are you with Serena and her recent run?
I've been so impressed with her. Not only did she arrive on the scene as a teenager and was dominant, but she's been able to have that type of longevity that is one of a kind. She's one of my favorite athletes ever.
And, I mean, this could be 8 Wimbledons for her. Mm-hmm. One shy of Martina Navratilova's all-time record of 9. This would be her 24th Grand Slam win, which would tie Margaret Court. She said,
is this the time did I tell you that I've been to Wimbledon to see her play?
This would be one of the many times.
I also saw Venus win there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. Listen, yeah. As we've discussed,
I had a guy that was a member of my country club that was a member of the All England Club.
He's so bougie.
And invited me there.
Oh, my.
For is that your British accent?
No,
that's just me talking King's English compared to that other slang I do.
On to the NBA. When you add the best player in the league to your team, your win total is most likely to go up. The Lakers won 35 games last season. Vegas has the over-under for LeBron's new team set at 50.5. Nick, you think the Lakers will win more than 50 games this season?
I do. I want people to be cautious. Whenever these over-unders come out, people are going to go through, if they're gamblers, go through it, and you're always too heavy on the overs. Now, listen, I'm going to give you a couple overs here. I think the Cavs will be an over. But you got to be careful, because you always look, you're like, oh, they'll win more, they'll win more. I think the Lakers, I said Cavs again, I apologize. I think the Lakers are a 54-55 win team, because I think they're going to add Kawhi.
Nice. I like it. I like the 50 wins. Sometimes Vegas gives you a little indicator. Vegas thinks they're going to have Kawhi also.
Correct. And the Cavs last year, I know it was in the East, they won 50.
Now, is that Cavs, the real Cavs?
Yeah.
Or the Cavs Lakers that you're still trying to get out of your vocabulary?
Cleveland won 50 games. That's what I'll say.
All right, sticking with NBA over-unders, coming off a league-best 65 wins, Vegas has the Rockets over-under next season set at 56.5. So you see the Rockets having a drop off in their win total?
They didn't get better. I don't see how they can beat. There's only 20 teams that have won 65 or more games. So there's no way I think they can get to that. Golden State, I believe, will be a little more inspired during the regular season just because they have Boogie Cousins. Now, they won't get back to the level that we've seen them, but no, Houston comes back to the pack.
I think this is a really good number set by Vegas, because I think that they will be in the high 50s, 56.5. That's right around where they'll probably be. This is another one that I would gun to my head if I had to bet it, and I have to bet it, I would say over. I think they're a 58-59 win team. I think they're going to be more judicious with Chris Paul's minutes, and I think that you're going to see, by the way, maybe they have baked into this the boost they're going to get from signing Melo. Got to think about that as well.
Well, also, they might have had them at 60 games. Melo's playing, they're going down to 56.
2 years ago, you would have found this unbelievable, but things do change quickly. Late last night, Isaiah Thomas agreed to a one-year, $2 million deal with the Nuggets. This only two seasons ago, Isaiah averaged 29 points for the Celtics, finished fifth in MVP voting. And for a little perspective, Steph Curry finished sixth in MVP voting that year, right behind him. All right, Chris, what do you make of this news?
Nick, I got to give you credit. You were one of the first people, long before we started this show, you started talking to me about sometimes an athlete's mentality to try to just play through injuries, to try to, you know, I'm going to be there with my teammates, I'm going to be there for them, that it can come back to haunt him. I was like, no, man, he's going to be all right. IT, what he decided to do in that playoff, doing damage to that hip, and then ultimately being traded to one of the worst places if he was trying to earn a max contract, and that was to Cleveland. With LeBron being there for his last year, what they were trying to do. I mean, you were on top of it as far as, man, I believe this guy's going to lose $100 million. I was like, no, Nick, he's not going to lose. No, Chris, he could. Boston right now, as they stand, they have to give him a max deal. Oh. Then he gets injured. Then we get the trade. Then we get the other trade to L.A., and now we have the one-year deal for $2 million. I like the fact that he's joining a good young team. I like the fact that he's in the Western Conference, too.
And he's joining the coach he loved, the coach in Sacramento that he liked, Mike Malone, who ended up getting fired. He's joining him, also a team that they're not interested in defense.
No.
They just want to outscore you. Like, this,
yes.
Stylistically, this makes sense for him, but it's so interesting this news came out yesterday, because I was thinking about Isaiah Thomas while I was watching that. I mentioned I went to the Adidas Gauntlet Finals here in New York City. And the team that I went to watch, team out of Houston Go Basketball University, their best player, their star player, is a 5'9 point guard. It's a little kid he's going to go to. He's Texas A&M commit. He's a bulldog. And I watched him, and he's so skillful. But he's 5'9". A lot of those guys are 6'7", 6'8". And how much he has to do, how much harder he has to work, how much more skill he has to have than everybody else to get to his spots because he's so much shorter. He is taller than Isaiah Thomas, and he ain't playing against NBA guys. And it made me think while I was watching him, how amazing Isaiah Thomas must have been as a prep player, as a collegiate player. And then the dude scored 50 in an NBA game, in a playoff game, pardon me. He had a 50-point playoff game on his resume before LeBron did. LeBron's first 50-point playoff game was game one of these finals. And to go from that to look at the MVP voting from that year, just show it real quick, and their salaries. Every single person on this list that you're about to see is making the maximum they're eligible to make, except for Durant, who took slight pay cut. And if we can't show it, Russ is at 40, Harden 42, Kawhi at 19, LeBron at 38, the average salary, Steph at 40, Giannis at 25. Every single one of those guys is making the maximum they can make according to years in the league.
And Isaiah Thomas is making $2
million. $2 million. It's a sports tragedy. People can say, oh, $2 million's a ton. Okay, that's fine. But $2 million's a lot of money. You know what's more than that? The $98 million that he ended up leaving on the table. It's brutal.
All right. When the Dallas Cowboys cut Dez Bryant in April, they basically became a team without a number one receiver. With Dak Prescott entering year three, the quarterback could struggle with a receiving core that's filled with question marks. But according to former Cowboys quarterback Tony Romo, Dallas has reason for optimism.
It depends on what you're defining as a number one receiver. I mean, is it by name alone? Is it by talent? I mean, what, you don't know that they don't have one. There's always someone that can come up. For me, it was Miles Austin after T.O. left, and it was the same discussions then. At the end of the day, if you put the ball in small windows and you're aggressively putting the ball where you want, you know, there's going to be windows. It's just when you have somebody who's super talented, the windows are wider. So if you have Julio Jones, the windows are wider, and so you don't have to be as perfect as a quarterback. So, you know, as Dak continues to improve and gets to the level he feels comfortable at, then I think the windows don't have to be as big. So from that perspective, they just need, you know, guys to get into their spots and the ball will get there, and that's how they're going to do it.
Steve, we've been looking at this wrong. Maybe not who the Cowboys have in the receiving core, but maybe the way Dak is going to play in year three and how far he's come, and maybe he could do more with less, which is what he's going to have to do, seemingly.
Jenna, great question, but absolutely no.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for being with us.
I mean, if throwing and catching the football was as easy as Tony Romo described it, man, Tony Romo would still be playing football. And did they actually replace the productivity after T.O. left? He mentioned a guy, Miles Austin. I'll even take him as that. Who on this team could be Miles Austin? Well, what was Miles Austin known for? He was really good after the catch. I mean, he could catch the ball, strong guy, physical guy, become a very, very good route runner. Who's going to be that guy for them? Also, Tony couldn't answer this question. Guess who was throwing the ball to them?
Tony Romo.
Him. And Tony Romo is a lot better quarterback than Dak. Tony Romo forgot about a very, very important part of the receiving quarterback combination. He was like, hey, the guy just get there. The ball's going to be there. He was playing from his game. With Dak, we don't know if the ball's going to be there. We don't know if it's going to be in stride. We don't know if it's going to be on target. And we know he doesn't have the anticipation of Tony Romo. Tony Romo helped make Dez Bryant who he was. Dak Prescott helped get Dez Bryant off the Dallas Cowboys because he couldn't develop chemistry. So throwing the ball, catching the football in pro football games, it is far more complicated. And, man, when you don't have a number one, oh, it becomes harder on all the other skill positions. So it becomes harder for the quarterback because you don't have that huge separation. You don't have all those easy throws. And for the offensive coordinator, man, you can draw up a play 5 or 6 yards. You have a number one guy, he might turn that into a big play. He might turn that into a first down. But when you don't have all that hidden yardage that great players provide, the game of football becomes harder than the way Tony described it.
And I'm going to add one other thing to Romo's commentary, which is not an indictment. It's not a knock on him. I think it's human nature. And I'm going to use, like, Chris, you take great pride in being objective and that you're not, you give me a hard time sometimes because you say I'm a little too fanish at times and I got to be a little more objective. But with all that said, you still have a soft spot in your heart for the Minnesota Vikings. Like, even if you tell me I'm wrong right now, I know there's still a little extra place in your heart for the Vikings. And so
the Vikings need to get their offensive line to be better. Okay, if they want to be a real Super Bowl contender, I know they gave Cuz the guaranteed money. I know people are picking them for the Super Bowl, but that offensive line, man, is suspect.
You can be right. And so you do a very good job being objective. But I also sat here the day after the Minnesota Miracle, and I know that resonated with you a little more than if it were the Washington Wonder, whatever. Who Tony Romo play for? Dallas Cowboys. Am I wrong in saying where's Tony Romo live still?
Dallas area.
Dallas. And so Tony does a great job. And I know he's a national commentator now and he's supposed to be, but he also has still, I think, I think he's going to give a heavy benefit of the doubt to that organization and try to think about ways things can happen, which is why he pulls Miles Austin out of the air. Now, the Miles Austin thing is interesting to me, though, and I am curious. How do you go from a guy, year one of Miles Austin, he's just a special teamer. Years two, he's almost exclusively a special teamer. Year three, he fights his way as to a fourth, fifth wide receiver. But through 3 years in the league, he had 18 catches. Year four, Miles Austin had 81 catches, 1,300 yards, 11 touchdowns. How does that happen?
Well, from a scouting process, you get someone who you realize that, you know something? This might look like a small building, but it's got a good foundation. Miles was a very good athlete, had underrated speed. He was bigger than people thought that he was. And when he got the competition and the coaching, he actually got better. He was not a great college player. He didn't come into the league with all these accolades. So this small building now that had a good foundation, they put a big house on it. Now, that house didn't live too long. Right. The big win came. Yeah. But that is the difference between the great players and being able to maintain a high-level performance for a number of years compared to a guy who is a splash in the pan.
So the Vikings have room to improve.
Offensive line, you get your stuff together.
Coming up, are the Lakers going to miss out on the opportunity to land Kawhi? That's next on First Things First. Back here with NBA analyst Sarah Kustok. We're talking the Kawhi Leonard drama. The Toronto Raptors are now even money betting favorites to land the superstar. Add the Raptors to the short list of destinations we've been hearing about. Lakers, Clippers, Sixers. Sarah, would the Lakers be making a big mistake letting Kawhi slip through the cracks should he sign somewhere other than Los Angeles?
I think the Lakers should go after him, and I think they should go after him now. I think he would be an incredible asset now having LeBron James. Of course, there's discussion about what they would be willing to give up, who they would be willing to give up, their top assets. Brandon Ingram, to me, is tops on that list. But absolutely, I think, one, you go get him because you don't want to take the chance of what happened with Paul George, despite feeling like I don't think that's going to happen. But to LeBron James, I know he signed for a four-year contract, but there's still a window that you want to get the team acclimated. You want to push towards getting to that championship caliber level. And I think that time is now.
I think there's a certain obligation to Magic Johnson and Laker Nation. Yes, I can understand. On as far as putting the message out there, yes, this is a 2-year, 18 and 19 free agency, just so people don't get too excited. But when you have LeBron James, there's a responsibility to be able to, in his prime, while he's one of the best players in the world, and that's only going to last for a couple years, mm-hmm. Like, you're obligated to compete for a championship when he's the best player. That's when you're getting. Now, we know LeBron, we hope that he retires as a Laker, but that's not a guarantee. We don't know what we're going to have on the back end of LeBron James, but I think it's important in year one and two that they partner someone up with them that they have legitimate chance for a championship. Because they got a team today, and forget what Vegas is saying, they don't have no chance for no championship today. But if you get Kawhi immediately, the window is wide open, and especially at the beginning of that contract, those first 2 years, man, pair him with someone compared to missing 50% of that window. Because, see, my window is not 2 years, two of the four. It's when he's the best player.
Your window's 2 years. You feel like you know you've got 2 years of prime LeBron left because
yes,
of how
yes.
well he played last
year. I think
year.
He can do 35, 12, and 8 in the finals for the next 2 years.
But I want to add an element to this conversation that has not, I don't think it's been acknowledged. Let's just say this world existed, that you knew with utter certainty Kawhi was coming a year from now. You can still, and you knew with utter certainty, by the way, that if he came this year, you're still not winning the title. Let's say both those things were written in stone.
Mm-hmm.
You can still make the argument. You should trade Brandon Ingram and some other pieces for him. Why? Because we don't know if LeBron plus Kawhi is enough to topple Golden State. And if you end up actually needing a third really quality player, do you know how much easier it is to get them next offseason if Kawhi's already in place? not just from an attractiveness standpoint, from a salary cap juggling standpoint. With the guy is already on your team, you can say, listen, your cap hold right now is $20 million. Here's your extension. We're not going to give it to you yet until we bring this player in. You can start doing a lot of the machinations you need to do. Do you know how much harder it is? If we're talking, it's July 3rd, 2019, and that's when Kawhi comes. But damn, Clay was leaving, but he already went. He went to the Clipper. Whatever it is, like, there is a benefit of having the guy in house. If it's not enough, just the two.
There's a huge benefit to that. But say they win 50 games, also, it's a lot easier to get that third guy to join because you've seen. Okay, wow, I could see how this is gelling. I could see myself and. Mm-hmm. We talked about the reason why you, even if you have to overpay for Kawhi, because you were getting a package of LeBron and Kawhi. Now you're looking to 2019. Oh, I'm with you guys. Let's overpay because we're going to get three superstars. So let's overpay.
Yeah.
Well,
it's on the board.
You remove the maybe if you don't get Kawhi, because now you're trying to add the second piece and you can't add the third.
And all we've been talking about this summer is that there's no money in the free agent class of 2019. Well, you better believe during the trade deadline, coming up and during this season, different teams are going to be making moves and they're going to be positioning themselves for what they want to do. So to your point, which is an excellent one, it gives the Lakers an opportunity this season to have LeBron, to have Kawhi, and figure out how exactly they want to structure their roster.
Should the Lakers be working and moving independent of what the Warriors are doing? Because if you're right and the Warriors win this year, and now most likely all these guys are going to want to come back and do it one more time together. Well, now you're looking at 2 years where you don't really have a chance, no matter, I mean.
Oh, I can't listen. C thinks I shouldn't be given, I shouldn't just forfeit this season anyway. What I certainly can't do is forfeit 2 seasons. Yeah. I can't give
Adam Silver called me and said, please tell your partner.
Stop forfeiting.
Everything is up for grabs in 2019.
And
it's going to be a competitive season.
And I can make the. Your point on the trade deadline's a good one. Not just the trade deadline, the buyout deadline. Like, people are given my guy Daryl Morey a hard time because he is leaving some money available. And everyone thinks it's because Tillman Fertitta, who's got just mountains of money, sleeps on it, that he doesn't want to pay the tax. That is not why. It's because Morey wants to be able to give the players that are bought out at the deadline a little extra than the teams that can only offer them the minimum. Save one extra bullet. Why do I bring that up? If you already have Kawhi in place and there's a veteran that is bought out and he wants to win a championship, right? And the Warriors are like, we're not adding anybody. So I'm not saying you're going to win a championship in L.A.,
right. But
it might be your next best chance, your best opportunity. Add the team that way or at the trade deadline if someone comes available that we didn't think was going to come available.
And I hate bringing this up because I never like to talk about this with players, but we're assuming Golden State's going to be healthy and have their full roster for the entirety of the season or throughout the play. You never know what can happen throughout the course of a season. So for the Lakers to say, oh, we're going to take this year off. We got LeBron. We're going to figure things out. We're going to get our young guys' experience, that's, to me, like, now is the time to start putting things in place.
So is we started this conversation earlier in the show by talking about whether Ingram is expendable or not, and you get rid of Ingram. Do you keep him or do you not if Kawhi's
the
guy you
for
want?
Kawhi, I would absolutely move Brandon Ingram.
He got to go.
Yeah, there's no question. No matter how, I think he's a really good prospect.
Yeah, but and I don't mind letting them have Kuzma either. I love Kuz.
So you get rid of both of them.
Yeah, I mean, whoever else they want. I mean, you have to know what the domino effect is going to be. And you have to ask yourself, in the best case scenario, are any of these players going to turn into Kawhi? And I would say no.
And even if they do, by the time they do, LeBron's not LeBron.
And that's the point. And I guess that's it. Because even if they might, Ingram I love, Ingram I would have a hard time parting with, but if it's for Kawhi, that's a good sell.
And if I can add one more piece to the reason why it makes sense to do it this year from a cap standpoint, when we're talking the trade deadline, those guys you signed to one-year deals, they are movable come mid-December, I think it is. It's got to be. There's a certain amount of time you have to wait before you can trade a player. But it's before the trade deadline.
Yes.
You are not going to take on any excess cap stuff if Kawhi's not on your team already. But if Kawhi is on your team already and there's a fringe all-star available and all the team wants is picks and cap space, you've got a bunch of expiring deals now. You have KCP. Mm-hmm. You have Rondo. You have deals that would be movable at the deadline. You would never move if Kawhi's not on your team yet because you have to let those deals expire so you can bring him in. There's a lot of reasons that aren't just getting Kawhi Leonard that make sense as far as why you should do everything to get Kawhi Leonard right now.
And that's why all of those contracts make sense to me, the expiring contracts, because those are always movable parts.
All right, Sarah, stick around. Coming up, would a fifth MVP in year 16 be LeBron's biggest accomplishment yet? That's next. This is First Things First. Back here with NBA analyst Sarah Kustoff. Now time for Say What? Lakers guard Josh Hart has been tearing it up in the summer league. However, he already knows what he's going to do when he has some downtime. Say what?
Oh, Jenna, you almost got it.
So how are you going to spend these next couple of days getting ready for the next round of tournament play?
I'm going to relax and play Fortnite. That's about it. It's a new season right now, so I'm about to go get some dubs. But I'm going to just kick back, relax. You know, my parents are here. I'm going to hang out with them and, you know, play some video games.
I've never seen a video game more quickly get bigger than Fortnite.
First, is it because people could play against one another?
Well, but they've been able to do that forever. It's free, and it's made, I think, over $1 billion. It's a free download game. I've never seen a video game hit the zeitgeist like this. I am trash at it. Like, it's a bit of Minecraft to it. It's like a first-person shooter, but you also got to be able to build things. It is in the NBA
circles.
Well,
who's the demographic for the Minecraft?
Seemingly, well,
I'll
for
tell
Fortnite.
You it's not. For Fortnite.
It's seemingly everybody. I mean, from my daughter, who's 13, plays it. My son plays it. I attempt to play it. A lot of, like, my kids' friends' parents play it. Coach Mangini plays it.
I don't play it. Do you
Sarah
play it?
Sarah Kustak doesn't
no,
play
No, I'm
it?
Not into Fortnite, but I'm just going to tell you, if something has the pool where it can keep you in a Las Vegas room compared to hitting them casinos in streets, that's a powerful thing.
Yeah, man. Fortnite's crazy. And it's Dusty right now is salivating to get on set. Dusty's our stats guy, who's also our resident gamer. We've never talked about
Yeah, there's a better chance of Sarah and I playing Fortnite than Dusty being on the set. Okay?
All right, go get That's it, Josh Hart, and then maybe hit a craps table up.
Yeah.
Fortnite has the feel like 60 Minutes is going to come to a long piece on it. Like, it's become so big.
It's the zeitgeist, no question about
it. All right, let's get back to LeBron James, where expectations are already as high as, I don't know, who's high? Odds makers have the King as the favorite to take home his fifth NBA MVP this season. Ahead of guys like Anthony Davis, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and last year's MVP, James Harden. Sarah, how impressive is both my pronunciation and LeBron being the MVP favorite entering year 16?
Your pronunciation is off the charts.
Thank
Jenna.
You so much, Sarah.
I think impressive in the sense of it being his 16th year, but not LeBron. I think he should be. I think that given the season that he had last year, what he has shown, the expectation for next season, I believe that if he's able to play the way he did and do what he has the potential to do with this Lakers roster, and we'll see what it actually looks like once the season started, but it's not, it kind of, us with LeBron, I think we take things for granted with him and the type of player he is. So for a player to be in their 16th season doing it, absolutely. But for LeBron and for what we know, the level that he is playing at right now, to me, I feel like that's a very accurate expectation.
Nick, how many seasons has it been since LeBron won his last MVP?
Oh, so I got to do that math real quick. 7.
That's
and
fast.
In the last 5 years, who's won the MVP?
It's gone KD, Steph, Russ, Harden.
I just want you to think of the 5 seasons, the types of years, starting with KD, that year that he had 5 years ago, backed up by 2 Steph Currys. Mm-hmm. And then Russ, he was always knocking at the door, but then KD left. He was able to get over the hump. And Harden could have won 1 out of the last 3. Mm-hmm. So it's been monumental type seasons, prolific scoring, assisting, and even KD, his overall basketball game.
And KD had the stretch of, like, 40-point games. Russ was out. His scoring that year was off the charts. Go ahead.
So LeBron, I would say, yeah, it's a tremendous feat. Yeah, I'm shocked. But I can make a great argument. LeBron should have won MVP last year.
Yes.
I mean, he was a lot better than Harden, but they owed Harden one because he had finished second. So,
and Harden's team was so much better.
Yes.
And
so that would have been one of the lead arguments for them. So LeBron has been there. It's not like he just came out of nowhere. He could have won one out of the last three. So having him in there at year 16, I'm not surprised by that. But I believe it's important that he's able to do something like this, win an MVP at an advanced age and get his third team to win a championship before we can get him to where Michael Jordan is. So having him in this conversation, I think, is tremendous. His overall longevity will be second to none as far as any NBA career. He's not going to get the six championships. So those MVPs, when he gets them, I believe that to be very important.
Well, I also think, to your point about Harden and maybe being owed one, I think in voters' minds now, they have been thinking about how close LeBron has been.
Okay.
Yes. Past few, and there was so much talk and discussion about him last season and what he did and just how that stacked up to the season Harden was having. So I believe in voters' minds heading into this season, they've got LeBron on their mind and the understanding how long it has been that he's been MVP, having been the greatest player on the planet.
Listen, this past year the 12th straight year he was top five in MVP voting, which is comical. Like, how does that happen? 12 straight years. Of course, he doesn't get hurt because he's never been hurt. Of course, he doesn't have a down year because he's never had a down year. Like, the 12th straight year, top five in MVP voting, that's never been done before. And this has never been done before. To be the Vegas favorite, the leading candidate for an MVP of the NBA after year 15, it's never been done before, and I would argue likely won't be done again anytime soon. What LeBron is doing is something of a disservice, unintentionally, to all the guys that are following him. Because it has been common NBA trajectory for the best players. Year 12, 13, a little 8 to 10% deterioration each year. And we're seeing LeBron, you were hearing the argument last year in year 15, is this his best offensive season ever? And so that's going to be our most recent memory. Mm-hmm. That's going to be what the standard we hold KD to, Anthony Davis to, Giannis to, this type of longevity. And it's not duplicable.
Even a once every generation type player that at this stage, they would start to level off to tearing down. LeBron, we can argue, there's some areas he's gotten better. Last year, that's the best offensive I've seen LeBron play. Maybe 1 year there in Miami, but last year what I saw, because he got on the ball. He was handling the ball a lot more in his overall decision-making. I thought it was spectacular.
He set career highs in rebounds and assists per game.
And yes. His perimeter shooting.
Yeah, so his overall game, it's still tearing just a little ticks up, and that's the unbelievable part.
Do you think that they really are going to change the style of play? How much do you think the style of play will change? Because obviously the talk and the discussion with Rob Pelinka is that they want to get the ball out of LeBron's hands and they want to not so much have him be the playmaker, surround him with shooters, which obviously the roster doesn't look like. Do you think that will happen?
Do you have a favorite restaurant? Do you have one restaurant you love more than anything else? Please say yes. It helps the argument.
Yes.
Okay, let's just go with that.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what that restaurant is.
So we live in New York. You have the greatest restaurants in the world, yet about one in, I don't know, every other weekend, I'm talking to my wife, where do you want to go? Got all these options. I'm like, let's go to the best one, the one we know we love, the one we know works. That's what happens. I've heard a lot of times we're going to change up how LeBron does it. We're going to play at a faster pace. We're going to get him off the ball. He's going to play on the block more. And then all of a sudden games start being played. And it's like, you know who's our best option to handle the ball? That guy. You know who's our safest option? You know the guy that we know isn't going to screw it up? So I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe that LeBron's going to play at a fast pace and be off the ball once I see it, because I've never seen it.
And it's not that the Lakers have to do too much to change or be any better to help him in order for him to nab the MVP. I mean, look what he played with last year. He had to be good last year. to salvage the season, mm-hmm. to save the team, to get them anywhere, and his own personal accolades sort of just came along with it. I wonder if the same thing could be said for what's happening or what's going to happen in Los Angeles. How much does this Lakers team need to give him to set him up for that?
Well, the Lakers team and their win total. Just like Harden at 65 wins, he was able to benefit from that. Best player on the best team. If LeBron is able to take them from 35 to 50 wins, 15-plus games, Los Angeles out of the playoffs, that storied franchise, that right there, that's like him averaging 27 on paper. They might give him 30 because of what he's done to the organization.
And that makes a difference because we talk so much with MVPs about what does their team do? What has their team done? James Harden, that was a huge part of the argument mm-hmm. because they had the best record in the league. So
Russ without KD. Yeah.
Four mm-hmm. sub 30 win seasons, and then last year to have won over 30. But if they can make that significant of a jump, if they can get the 50 wins, that's a huge boost to the argument.
And I said it'd been 7 years since LeBron won the MVP. We listed the five. This will be the sixth season, I apologize, since he's won an MVP. But just quickly, I once again will implore Adam Silver, as he continues to be a forward-thinking commissioner, this is something you can do retroactively. If we're going to continue to give the MVP and continue to recognize we are not giving it every year or most years to the best player, we should have a separate award that simply is, you can give them a title belt, let them carry it around for the year. Who is the best player alive? Because that belt LeBron will have held for 11 straight years minimum. I'd love to know who it was historically. I think I do. And moving forward, it would make the MVP vote cleaner. You would hear less, well, how can you give it to Harden when he... No. He didn't get the Best Player Alive award. He got the MVP. We combined those.
Adam Silver said he was going to do that. He called Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan said, me, sir.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.